It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You're listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to 2A Radio, folks. Today is the much-anticipated AK-47 Day with the much-anticipated call-in guest by the name of Jim Fuller. Jim, welcome to 2A Radio.
Good morning, Bill. How are you today?
I'm doing great, man. I am just chipper as can be. How about you?
Not bad. Glad to be here, my friend.
I'm glad that you were able to. I know that you usually start early in the day, and I thank you very much for taking this valuable time to call in. Guys, I've known Jim Fuller for what, Jim? About 9 years now? Maybe 10, something like that. We met when we trained together for a good couple, 2-3 years. And Jim, by trade, is an electrician, and then you got into doing gunsmithing with AK-47s.
Well, as you know, I've always, gunsmithed on the side, even during the time I was in the electrical business. But it's truly my passion, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to make it my living now, as well as for 3 or 4 other people.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, not only do you gunsmith on AK-47s, you are also a qualified, tactician and range master for the gun as well. So, I mean, you've really run the entire gamut. So our first segment, Jim, is a little shorter. We've only got about 2 minutes left in the first segment. But why don't you start off by telling the folks a little bit about the history of the AK-47. We'll start at the beginning, and then we'll go from there.
Well, essentially, Mikhail Kalashnikov, the father of the AK-47, he was a Russian soldier in World War II, and I believe he was assigned to a tank division. And he, in his duties, realized that the issued rifles were really cumbersome and not very useful for somebody that worked in a tank. During his process of fighting in the war, he was injured pretty badly and he ended up in the hospital. And while laying in the hospital, he designed the AK-47 for lack of something better to do. He just got a piece of paper and started drawing stuff out on his own thoughts.
Now that's useful time. That's useful time.
Oh, yeah.
Most people sit there and just eat bread pudding, but go ahead.
Yeah, good point. But anyhow, once he was healed up and, towards the end of the war there, they started looking at what he was doing and they realized that he was onto a concept that was something good for their purposes. And so they produced the AK-47. In 1947, it was adopted by the Russian Army. And, there's a lot of, I know we don't have time to get into the details of it in this segment, and we can probably continue that next, but it did go through quite a few changes in the early renditions of it. It started out to be a stamp receiver, but their stamping technology that the Russians had was not really that good at the time, whereas their milling technology was. So they ended up producing in mass at first a milled receiver version, which later on began, once they had their stamping technology down, they went back to making them stamp receivers, which is what the majority of them are now.
Curiously, is that when it went from the AK-47 then into the AKM and then back to the AK-47? Was that kind of the transition with the...
The AKM, it was a stamp receiver before it was called the AKM. The AKM stood for AK Modernized, and there were some other changes made in it for that, but it was a stamp receiver before that.
Okay. Well, then I will let you continue on that when we get back from the break, guys. Stay tuned. We got a break coming up next. We'll be back 3 minutes after that begins. Stay tuned. We got Jim Fuller, expert on the AK-47, sitting in with me today. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
All right, folks, we're back. Got Jim Fuller on the line. Jim Fuller, an expert, really, on the AK-47, one of the leading gunsmiths and tune-up guys on the AK-47s in the U.S. And, you know, Jim, it's kind of funny. You know Dave Champion, and, you know, Dave does a show here on RBN at 3 o'clock Central, where we're 9 in the morning. And I got to tell you, I envy that time slot because this is early for me. But Dave hangs out with a whole group of guys. They're all a bunch of AK-47 fanatics. You've trained with every single one of them. And every one, with the exception of Dave, has sent their gun to you to work on. And the reason Dave hasn't sent his, I actually had this discussion with him during lunch sometime late last week, and he said, I just don't want to part with my AK long enough to have Jim work on it. However, he does have a backup one, so he's talking about getting that thing ready and sighted in so he can send his primary to you. But all of these guys who are very, very well-trained guys have all sent their guns to you to get tuned up and set up. So, anyhow, I'm sorry. I just wanted to give a little bit more background on you and some of the guys that trust you to work on their survival guns. And so, anyhow, we're back. We were on the history of the AK-47 and the development of that. So I'll let you carry on from there.
Okay, well, where we were originally, we were talking about the development there, I guess. And, you know, the AK really hasn't changed a whole lot over the years. I mean, even the more modern versions that we do, there are some differences, but the operating system is still pretty much the same. And the reason being is it's just a phenomenally designed gun for dependability. Now, there are those that say that the accuracy of the AK suffers, and I would certainly agree it does. But as you know, Bill, we've played with a lot of different types of guns, and you know one thing, the most reliable guns are not the most accurate.
No, they're the ones that go bang every single time you pull the trigger.
And you know as well as I do, that's far more important than whether you can shoot a 1-inch group or a 2-inch group.
That's right. You know, and it's funny, I have to tell you a little story, Jim. I was watching, the headline news once upon a time, it's probably about 3 years ago, and I don't know why, maybe Fox News was out that day, but I happened to have that on, and they had a guest on there from the Sundance Channel, which is, you know, one of these big tree-hugging, you know, the waiting for the second coming sort of, I guess, not even that, it's just a tree-hugging sort of PC kind of an organization, the Sundance Channel. And they had this guy, and they were talking about promoting a show that the Sundance Channel had put together on the AK-47. So the guy was doing the interview, asked the guy from Sundance, he said, so what are the problems with the AK-47? And here's the answer, I'm paraphrasing. He says, the problem with the AK-47 is it's plentiful, it's inexpensive to make, it's reliable, and for the most part, it's accurate. And I was wondering to myself, now he asked you the problems with the AK, buddy. Those all sound like great things to me.
Exactly what makes it so popular.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really is. I almost refer to the Glock as being the AK-47 of the handgun. It's just because it's simple, it's reliable, and it works. And the AK-47 is the same thing.
Yeah, very good comparison. You know, I'd like to touch on the accuracy issue of the AK.
Please do, because that's really been out there for years. People say, oh, you can't shoot it beyond 150 or 200 yards. And I would like to beg to differ, but you're the expert.
Well, you know as well as I, because we've played with these guns quite a bit, you know. And, well, you know, they're certainly not as accurate as a sniper rifle and probably not as accurate as a very well-made AR-15. There's still most AKs, even some of the cheaper ones that you can get, production AKs, are still going to shoot a 4-inch group at 100 yards. So if you take that out to 200 yards, you got an 8-inch group. And how big is a human chest?
Oh, it's about 10 inches, 8 to 10 inches.
So a good friend of mine refers to this not of minute of angle, but as minute of man. You get it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, if the shot's dead center of the chest or if it's 2 or 3 inches to the right of the dead center of the chest, is it still a good hit?
Absolutely.
And that's the point. You know, it's that constant, you know, AR versus AK argument, you know, that the AK is not as inaccurate as everybody says it is, just like the AR is not as unreliable as everybody says it is.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you agree?
I would, because, you know, Jim, I have sat and I've done a show on, or a couple of shows on the AR-15, and talked about how it's inherently not the most reliable system, but there are things you can do to make it more reliable. And when you build it up, of course, gone through all the parts you can order out of Brownells and things such as that, and build it up into a much more reliable gun. to the point where I wouldn't take a stock, standard, regular old, out-of-the-box AR-15 I knew nothing about and go betting my life on it. But mine, that I have done a number of things to increase the reliability, I will now bet my life that that gun's going to work. I know it's going to work.
Well, yeah, and you know, you've had the ability to run guns under extended heavy uses, so you understand the differences there. A lot of the guns that are made, whether it's an AK or an AR, you know, production type guns that are in the lower price range, these guns are not intended to take the abuse of heavy use, whether it's in fighting purposes or even in heavy training use. I mean, you know, on a lot of classes in 3 or 4 days, you can run 1,000 rounds of ammo through a gun.
Oh,
some
yeah.
of these guns won't hold up to that too well.
No, you know, and it's that way really across the board, as you well know. I mean, whether it's a handgun, a shotgun, a rifle, it doesn't really matter. If it's not a well-made, beefy gun with a good design behind it and well-made parts, it's going to suffer, and that's for sure. I mean, it's like taking a high point to a gunfight. It might save you in the gunfight, but you're not going to be able to train with it for a weekend and then have the thing work later. The thing's going to fall apart.
Yeah, you know, I mean, most of our customers, you know, if they're not, you know, contractors or military or LE in the business, they're hardcore training guys, you know. And you know the type I'm talking about. We've trained people like that for years.
Oh, yeah.
And these guys will shoot anywhere from 10,000 to 20,000 rounds a year through their guns, just training. And your average off-the-shelf AK or AR-15 is going to show problems over that period of time unless it's been properly blueprinted, fitted, you know, all the things you do to make it a dependable fighting rifle.
Now, let's talk about some of the things that you do with the AK-47, Jim, to really enhance these things. Now, let's start first with the platform of the gun. I mean, and this is a caveat streaming nicely from the previous discussion about whether or not you start with a good, solid gun or whether you start with one that's a little bit lesser expensive. Like, you know, give us an example of some of the guns that might not be up to the task of allowing 10, 20,000 rounds a year through the gun. And give us an example of some that will.
Well, really most all of them will, as long as they're, you know, set up properly and tweaked in a fashion to handle that. I mean, even the lowly Wasser, as people complain about all the time, you can pick one up for around $400 new, maybe $450. I'm not sure what the price is on them right now. And it's probably, I would say, one of the lesser quality production guns out there. But for not a whole lot of money, you can take that gun and turn it into a pretty decent fighting gun. I mean, over at Tactical Response, they've got some Wassers that we reworked that they use for rental guns, and they're approaching 100,000 rounds and still working fine. And those guys, you know, some of their classes, they'll run 5,000 rounds in 5 days.
They will. As a matter of fact, they're famous for one of the schools out there that'll fire a few more rounds than average.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and they're one of my favorite proving grounds. I send guns to them guys all the time for testing because I know that they're just going to beat the hell out of the gun. And oops, sorry.
That's okay. You can say hell on the radio show.
Okay, I don't
you just
know,
can't say...
Your world, man, not mine. They can take the beating. Obviously, starting with a better base gun, you can end up with a better gun overall. But even the Wasser at $400 for another $400 or $500, you can have a pretty nice gun done with it after that. You know, next up from there, there's a lot of, a lot of the American kit-built guns. I mean, that's what we do. We build a lot of guns from parts kits, but we also, you know, upgrade existing guns too.
Yeah, those parts guns are really popular right now.
They are, and there's a lot of them available at pretty affordable prices, but you need to understand that they're pretty hastily put together, and it doesn't mean that it's a bad gun, but it just may need a whole lot more tweaking to be able to handle heavy abuse like we're talking about here.
Gotcha.
You know, if you're a guy that's just going to shoot 100 rounds a year through your gun, then the $400 Wasser off the shelf is probably going to be fine for you. But if you're the other type of guy like we've been talking about who really seriously uses their gun as a working tool, you need something a little better.
Now, here's a question for you. There's a lot of discussion about going with the milled receiver over the stamped receiver. Does that argument really hold up? Is there really a big difference? Or is it kind of more the way that the gun is set up? If it's set up properly, it'll work regardless if it's milled or if it's stamped.
Oh, it will work, certainly. And a milled receiver is certainly a very high-quality gun. The two detractions to a milled receiver, in my opinion, are the weight, for one, because they are considerably heavier than a stamped receiver. And, you know, as well as I do, if you're walking around for 12, 14, 16 hours with a gun, that's going to make a difference.
Oh, God, yes. Every ounce is going to make a difference.
Oh, of course. And there's a tremendous difference in the weight of a milled and a stamped receiver. The other issue is price. They'll add about, you know, $300 to the price of a gun for a milled receiver. Now, is it really necessary? No, I don't believe it is. Is it nice? Of course it's nice. But, you know, are you going to go to war with a truck or are you going to go to war with a Mercedes? You know what I mean?
Okay, so when you're talking about some of the stamped receivers, are there good parts stamped receivers out there nowadays, or is it better to buy a completed gun?
You really got to know your product. If you're going to build a gun from scratch, the only American-made receivers I would recommend are Elk River or Nodak Spud. They're the only ones that are truly in spec and are heat-treated in a manner that is appropriate for the AK.
Now, again, you said Elk River.
Yeah, Elk River Tool and Die.
Okay.
As well as Nodak Spud.
Nodak?
Yeah, it's a weird name. Don't ask me where they got that name from. Nodak Spud.
Nodak Spud?
Yeah, Nodak Spud.
Spud, wow. Okay, well, that's
a weird name, but they do make a quality receiver. I personally prefer the Elk Rivers myself. I think the heat screening specs are a little closer to the original design, and they're a little more work for us to do, but I think overall you come out with a better gun when you've done something a little bit more realistic to spec.
All right, Jim. Jim, stay on the line. We're coming up on another break here. And
sure.
When we come back, what we want to do is talk a little bit about the advantages that the AK-47 might have when it comes to actually being used as a battle type of rifle or sport utility rifle over some of the other closed, more tighter tolerance sorts of systems. So stay tuned. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
All right, guys, welcome back. Again, we have Jim Fuller, one of the leading guys in the United States who knows all about the AK-47, not just the design and the use of it, but the implementation, the sprucing up and gunsmithing of the gun to really get it going. So, Jim, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you can do to an AK to really get the thing humming, like some of the things that you do in your shop.
Well, depending on whether it's a gun that's been sent in for rework or whether we're doing something from scratch, some of the main things you need to pay attention to, the most important part of the construction is the riveting, the barreling, and the head spacing. If that's not done correct, the gun will never be right to begin with, and that's where a lot of the kit builds in this country fall short, because there's a lot of bootlegged ways to put these things together, particularly riveting. And if it's not done right with the right parts and the right pressing jigs and things of that nature, you're going to end up with a lot of problems in that gun, possibly even shaking apart within 3,000 or 4,000 rounds.
Shaking apart. Wow.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see people doing things like screw builds and weld builds instead of using rivets, or if they use rivets, they use the wrong kind of rivets, and they use things like bolt cutters to press the rivets instead of properly using a jig. And there's just a lot of problems with doing that. You know, we've had guns come in that, you know, where they weld it, it's too brittle. The gun flexes, it shakes apart, you get stress cracks.
Mm.
Where they use, grade 8 screws as opposed to rivets. The screws are too brittle, they'll crack and they'll shear off, and then the gun starts falling apart. It's not a pleasant thing to do.
I guess there's a right way to do just about everything and a whole bunch of wrong ways to go about doing the same thing.
Yeah, remember the Chevy Vega with the aluminum motor blocks? I'm dating myself a little bit, but it's kind of the same thing.
Perfect. As a matter of fact, it's funny you say that, because when I was a kid, my dad had one of those cars, and what a piece of garbage.
Yeah, you know, when you build a decent platform around a bad foundation, you got a problem.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, you do. All right, so carry
also,
on.
You know, there's a lot of other things to do. You know, if you've got a good foundation to start with, there's a lot of tuning and tweaking that can be done to actually improve the accuracy, improve the reliability, and just improve the overall functioning of the gun, as well as things like, you know, dehorning things that your hands touch. One thing that I've found with the AK, using it as an impact weapon, it's a good idea to leave a lot of the sharp edges on it, because it's almost as good of an impact weapon as it is a fighting firearm.
Nice. Well, yeah, I guess, you know, I you and I have both taken different courses where, of course, you end up running a drill where the gun runs dry, so now what do you do? And the gun does turn into an impact weapon. So, yeah, I guess if the thing's sharp enough and it's got some arrows, that's a hell of a good idea.
There's a lot of really cool tricks that I learned from one of my Spetsnaz friends that you can do with the front sight and the mag and things like that for controlling other people or doing very severe damage to other people with just using the gun as an impact weapon. It's great stuff.
Sounds...
We don't take all the sharp edges off. We know the ones to leave.
Okay, good, good. All right. All right, so when it comes down to it, there's another bunch of questions that people have about, like, what furniture to use. Oh, the original wood that comes with it sucks, or the wood is the best thing that you ever had. Go with something synthetic, or, you know, stay away from the actual plastics and go with, more of a kind of a fiberglass, whatever the hell it is. Talk to us a little bit about the stocks with some of the advantages and disadvantages and whether you think that it's better to have, like, a collapsing stock, a folding stock, or a fixed stock. What's your opinion on these things?
Well, wood stocks are fine. If you're concerned about how your gun is going to look over time, you might want to stay away from the wood because it is going to get dinged and scratched, and you know the nice finish is not going to be so nice after several weeks or months of training and beating the gun around.
I'm more of a guy that appreciates that. If your gun shows it's got a few battle scars on it and the finish isn't perfect and the stock's a little messed up, that just shows that you've been using it. It's like having a clean football uniform. What have you been doing in it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I get that. The other thing, too, is the wood stocks tend to be a little heavier than the poly stocks.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, they've been working fine. Several of my AKs still have wood stocks on them just because I really kind of like wood, you know.
Gotcha.
And it's kind of nice to have that heft for certain things. But for my guns that I'm going to be using in the field or carrying a lot, I usually run polymer stocks on them just because the weight is so much lighter. And, frankly, they do hold up appearance-wise a lot better than the wood does.
Is there any particular brand of the polymer stock that you prefer or a couple of them that you like that maybe hold up a little bit better?
Kevlar, Arsenal stuff, that stuff is pretty good stuff. It's well-made polymer. It's original Bulgarian AK design. Generally fits the guns the best of most of the stuff out there. There are other things on the market that work, but I tend to lead toward the Kevlar stuff. The handguards have stainless steel heat shields in them, so the AK, if you ever ran one, you know they run pretty hot, and that heat shield's a real good idea.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I still have a scar from running an authentic Chinese full-auto AK once upon a time that burned my finger when I don't even know if I actually touched the barrel. I think I just got very close, and the heat coming off of it singed my finger, and I still have a little scar from that. So, yeah, those things really do heat up.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, in our classes, when we run full auto classes for the AK, we generally tell people that you need to put your support hand on the front of the magwell. One, it gives you a better support of the gun in close-range work, and it also keeps your hands away from the hottest part of the gun, because even out on the forearm can actually get pretty hot even on a full auto AK. The wood forearms will generally start smoldering, depending on how many rounds you're running through it and how much break the gun gets. So it does get pretty hot from, like, the magwell forward. So, you know, particularly in a full auto gun. Semi-auto is not going to get to that kind of temperature just because it's not running at that cyclic rate. But it still gets pretty warm, and you want to stay away from that metal on the front of that gun when it's been run a lot.
Yes, you do. Jim, we're heading up on another break. We've got a long segment coming up. Folks, if you want to call in and ask anything, the call-in number is 800-313-9443. We'll be right back. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Somebody get a silencer for this guy. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. All right. Welcome back, Jim Fuller and the AK-47 show here on Two-Way Radio. Now, Jim, let's talk a little bit about the AK-74. There's some people don't really understand the difference. I know that there's a difference in the caliber from 7.62x39 to 5.45x39. But tell us a little bit about that and what your opinion is between these two guns.
Well, the 74 is one of the more modernized versions of the AK. I've had some pretty detailed discussions with this with Sonny Pazikas, who was a former Russian Spetsnaz guy who used it.
Very famous former Russian Spetsnaz guy who's making the rounds around around the country. I mean, this guy's he's really made really training with the AK-47 in the States a completely different ballgame. This guy's a very credible guy.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's quite the guy. And as his sig line reads, you know, doing bad things to bad people since 1988. Trust me, he's done a lot of that. And he really knows what he's talking about.
Good.
So, you know, I value his opinion. We talk often. He's a really, really good guy, and he loves America. He's been here with his wife now for, I think, almost 14 years. And he's a very, very interesting man to know and to train with. If you haven't had a chance to train with him, I highly suggest it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. I had an opportunity this last year in 2009. There was a class that he was teaching, and I just was not able to go because it happened to be during the time well, I can't really get into why, but I had another event planned, and I just was not able to get away. But my intent is to train with him one of these days. It's very high up on the list, man.
Yeah, he's a good dude, and he's a very, very nice, enjoyable guy to be around. He really is a good guy, as long as he's your friend.
Yeah, as long as you're not on the wrong side of the street from him.
Yeah, exactly. But anyhow, back to the 74. Sonny and I had a pretty deep conversation about this because he's actually used the 74 against people. And his biggest observation of it is the round, compared to the 7.62 gun, has a lot of limitations. There's a lot of benefits to it, but a lot of limitations. It does not have the penetrating power of the 7.62. It's really a little bit more designed after our standard 5.56 round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a little bit smaller diameter bullet, but it's longer in size, and it's a tapered wall case, which makes it more reliable than the 223 round.
But it's also quite a bit lighter in weight, which I would imagine is going to be in the entire penetration issue is going to be because of the lighter weight.
Well, most of the what's mostly in this country is the Russian surplus, what is known as the 7M6, and this is the old Russian issue ammo. Sonny has told me that they now issue what they call 7N22, which is a whole different ballgame. If you had that ammo, that round is a hot round and would be the one to have over the 7.62 for a lot of reasons. The problem is we'll never see that ammo in this country.
Yes.
It's not going to ever be importable, particularly if it's still in use by the Russian army. But the biggest problem with the round is it's really good. One thing I've found with the round, and frankly, I have a 5.45 AKS 74U that is my main gun, and it's mainly because it's small, and I like the round for directly on human personnel because it is a very, very devastating round when it hits a human. It has a tumble factor that just blows away the 5.56 round, and it does very, very ugly things to flesh. The problem is with it is in hardened buildings like concrete building, it ricochets really bad.
Really?
Whereas the 7.62 doesn't tend to do that.
Now,
that's kind of the bad side to that. If you were going to use it inside your house, not a bad round because you're most likely going to hit the person before you hit anything hard surface. And the good thing about that bullet is it's not going to leave your house and do a lot of damage like the 7.62 might.
Okay. Now, as I understand, the majority of the ammo that you can get in that 5.45 for the AK-74. You can get ammunition still for, you know, maybe like $200-$220 for 1,000 rounds, but I understand that's a corrosive primer in that ammo as well. Is that something that you found as well?
Yeah, all of the surplus 5.45 is corrosive. The only 5.45 ammo that's not corrosive is the Wolf manufactured ammo or any of the production ammo that comes, but even then it's coming from, you know, Eastern European or Russian countries, and I was still maybe watch the gun just to make sure, because you just don't know. I mean, certainly if you're using the Russian surplus ammo, it is corrosive, and you do want to treat it as such.
Gotcha.
I tend to be a little sloppy on my AKs. I don't clean them as much, and a lot of my dealer samples are getting pretty corroded because, frankly, they're not worth a whole lot of money because they're dealer samples, so we don't care if they get corroded. We just rebuild them. But if it's your personal rifle and your privately owned semi-auto rifle, you really want to take care of the corrosive issues if you're shooting that kind of ammo, because it will eventually take a toll on the gun.
Sounds good. All right, Jim, we pretty much covered the gamut on AKs, so would you like to take a couple callers?
Yeah, sure, man. No problem.
All right. Marcus in Georgia is the first one on the line. Marcus, welcome to 2A
hey,
Radio.
How you doing, guys?
Doing good. What's
morning,
happening?
Marcus.
Well, wonderful. I'm ex-military, and I had the pleasure of shooting an AK variant called a Dragunov
a
couple of times just to play. And
tell me that isn't accurate.
Oh, it was real nice. I carried a 308 bolt gun, and like I said, I that was a lot of fun, you know. And I bought one as you know later, and built it to back the way it was that I carried on active duty. But one thing I was going to ask, I had this kid come to me that needed some money and sold me a when they first came in, one of those long-barreled Segas in 308.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually found that rifle shot like the Dragunov. Is that what you've been hearing, or is that true with those Segas?
Yeah, the Sega 308 is a 308 is a very accurate rifle. It has a nice heavy chrome lined barrel on it. It's very well made, and we have found the exact same thing. We have a program called the Gorilla Sniper Rifle that we work with quite a bit, and it's basically taking the PSLs. You know, the Dragunovs, as you said, they're pretty hard to get in this country. There's only ever been 100 imported of the real original Dragunovs, and last time I seen one sell, it was like 10 grand. So the PSLs have become like a popular thing. It's really not a Dragunov, but it's kind of close in some ways, you know. And even those can be accurized to the point where they're very effective out to 500-600 yards. And certainly the Saiga 308 is definitely a good way to go if you're looking for like a DMR-type rifle in the AK platform, because mainly because you have so many choices for ammo. I mean, there's a lot of different 308 ammo to put in that gun, and you can really get some really good accuracy out of that gun at long range.
Now, that's a semi-automatic rifle, correct, Jim?
That's correct, yes, sir.
Okay, what barrel length do those come in, the Segas?
I believe they came in 21-inch barrels, and they also come in an 18-inch barrel as well.
Oh, wow. So
we've
that's
done some cut-downs on them. You can even cut the barrels down. My friend over at Red Jacket, Will, he's done some Saiga rifles with 16-inch barrels that are just phenomenally accurate. You know, when
wow.
you cut those down, they tend to eliminate some of the barrel whip, and they tend to get a little bit more accurate. I personally think 18, 19 inches is probably a good length for that barrel. But you can definitely get some good performance out of that gun. Well worth the money.
Sounds good. Marcus, anything else?
Well, what I was going to say is I shoot national match ammo like I did back when I was active duty in the sniper rifle. And I found that Pre-V Partizan, I think they call it, their national match they make.
Mm-hmm. That's a good ammo.
I found in that Sega that I know you were talking about accuracy, but I wouldn't have any problem shooting at you out at 800 yards with that Sega.
I don't doubt it either, Marcus. They are capable of doing that. If you find the right load to go with the gun, it's pretty limitless what you can do with it. You can almost do as much work as you can with a bolt gun. And let's face it, you know, you've got experience with that. How often are you going to have to take a shot that far?
Well, I got some land here. I actually have a place where I shoot a 50 cal out to 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
On my neighbor's property. So I've got fields around that it's not a problem. We shoot coyotes, and they don't get away when I hit them with that 308.
No, they don't. They kind of almost vaporize, don't they?
Well, then, but you understand, I mean, you know, we shoot the smaller stuff when they're closer, but when they start getting out of different ranges, my other preferred weapon is a bolt gun, and a custom bolt gun, and 25-06 with a Lothar Walther barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, that's only really a 450-500-yard gun because the wind, you know, really pushes that 25 caliber bullet much more than it does the 30 caliber. But like I said, I was impressed this kid needed the money, and I bought it from him. I bought some mags for it, and like I said, I put a decent scope on it, one of those UTG side rails. And out of 300 yards, even with the iron sights, I wouldn't have any problem engaging somebody even further. But even with the basic iron sights, it's a... You know, but that thing going back to what you're talking about, the AKs, people say, oh, they're a short-range weapon, but I consistently practice 300, 400, 500 yards with my AK, and it's a short-barreled AK. And I don't have any problems hitting targets, and people say they're not that accurate, but I figure if you learn the trigger, learn how it shoots, practice at any range that you can, because the more you can practice at further at longer ranges, just the better marksman or rifleman you'll be. Over.
Oh, absolutely, sir. And you're right about that. I mean, people think that the AK is not capable of distance shooting like that. Now, the 7.62-39 is going to be limited in distance. You're not going to get pretty good hits out at 800 yards with that, but certainly you can with a 308 or a 7.62x54R, which is the comm block equivalent of the room.
Marcus, sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. It sounds like when you scored this Sega from the kid that needed money, you ended up being the windshield. Thanks a bunch for the call.
I appreciate it. God bless you, fellas.
All right, take care, Marcus.
See you, Marcus.
Now, Jim, I gotta ask you, or I gotta tell you, actually, that Privy Parisian, I think it's pronounced, that ammo. A friend of mine called me up about a little over a year ago, and he asked me to help him spec putting together a precision rifle. So, we found ourselves a Remington 700 PSS that was online. It was being sold out of the state of Oregon. A guy bought it from a sheriff's department that had it as a precision rifle. It had a logbook. It only had about 220 rounds through it, already threaded at the muzzle so you could put a can on it, right. Already set up with a 20 MOA one-piece base. Then we went on to sample list and got him a good Mark IV scope that had ring marks on it from whatever display case it had been, and then got some of that Privy round, that Privy ammo for him. And he was drilling nut-tight rounds. We're talking 3/8 of an inch with that ammo in that gun combination. I got to tell you, that is some good stuff.
Yeah, it really is. You know, most of the bad rap for the AK and its accuracy really does come from ammo, because there's so much cheap surplus ammo on the market that people think that's the standard, and it's really not. You know, something like the Parvy, like you're talking about, or even some of the, you know, some of the American ammunition that's made in those calibers too. It really makes a big difference when you put better quality ammo in there. You know, the AK has always suffered from the stigma of being a cheap gun, so people thought it should have cheap ammo. You know, well, you get what you pay for. Let's put it that way.
You know, it's so true, and I have seen different times where people will roll out. Obviously, the AR-15 is a big thing. You know, you've seen where people will put on classes. You might have 30 or 40 people in a class. And say it's set up all for AR-15s, you're not going to find any two guns that are alike. Now, the AK-47s you'll find more often nowadays than before. It used to be all AKs were the same, but now people are really getting those things up to speed and kind of personalizing them. But the thing that I always put out there was, why would you put together a gun that you really enjoy, one that's really your gun, it's going to be your defensive gun, your battle rifle? It's like having a car or a truck that you set up to be kind of your survival vehicle, and then you put the cheapest gas you possibly can find in the tank. You know, that's like running the crappiest ammo, the cheapest ammo that you can possibly find through the gun. It just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, the AK has certainly suffered from that problem. You know, and as you mentioned, I mean, with the popularity of the AK has certainly grown in the last few years in this country, and after the last SHOT Show, I truly believe it is a viable, accepted American weapon now. Certainly not as popular as the AR series rifles, but I know there's major American manufacturers that are currently designing all American made AKs because they see the market out there and they see the need for the gun, frankly.
Most popular rifle in the world today, the AK series of gun.
Yeah, they estimate there's been 100 million of them made over the years from all the different countries that make them. Nobody knows exactly for sure. I mean, that number may fluctuate anywhere from 80 to 120 million, but that's probably about, seriously, there's been 4 to 5 times more AKs made than any other type of gun in this country, this world, really.
Well, and you know, another thing that I'm digging about the AK is the accessories that are becoming more and more available. It used to be difficult to find something to be able to mount a red dot on the thing, but now there's different red dot and other scope mounting systems. They're all over the market, and we're talking from just 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, the best of that breed would be the Ultimac. It's a scope rail that replaces the gas tube, and that's the best one we've found for a red dot type mount, because it sits low enough and it's secure enough that the zero won't wander, and you can co-witness your iron sights through the tube as well. So that we found to be the best red dot setup for the gun is using the Ultimax Scout Rail.
Ultimax, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so again, tell us what American-made stamped receiver that was heat-treated that you liked. Again, you said that was Elk River?
Yeah, Elk River is what we use primarily. We also use Nodex, but they make a decent receiver as well.
Okay.
I just personally think that the Elk River comes out a lot better when it's done. It's actually more work for us, but it allows us to do things to the gun that we can't do with something that's already been worked to a certain point. You know what I mean?
All right. And then you were talking about the polymer furniture for the gun that you liked. Mm-hmm. Was made by which company again?
K-Bar is a good supplier of that.
K-Bar.
Some other stuff on the market that's pretty decent, too. There's actually, TAPCO has a few products, and I say few, that I consider fighting worthy. Some of their new handguard stuff and their butt stocks are not bad. They make a good pistol grip. Those are pretty acceptable parts, too. Just like with the AR-15, as you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that's good, and there's an awful lot of stuff that's not worth the money.
Oh, my God, it's stuff in this industry is designed to be sold but not necessarily used.
Right, and that's one reason why people will come to us, because they know we'll give them straight information. We're not selling them something that's based on a profit margin or based on, you know, how many we can get when we need them, this kind of thing. We only recommend or sell what we know are the best fighting rifle parts that you can get for the purpose.
Jim, if some of the listeners want to email you and have any questions addressed or answered, first of all, I'd like to say Jim's a very busy guy, so keep it to the point. But, Jim, do you have an email address that the listeners could send you any queries?
Yeah, they can go to our website at rifledynamics.com, and you can email us through the website at jim@rifledynamics.com or dan@rifledynamics.com.
Okay,
Dan is my head armorer, and he's a very talented man. He came to me about 3 years ago to learn the AK, and he ended up working for me full-time. He's a wonderful guy, and he can answer any question as well.
Fantastic. RifleDynamics.com. Jim, stay on the horn. We've got one more break coming up here, the shortest and final segment, for a little closing of any thoughts. So stay on the line, folks. We'll be back after these messages. Stay tuned. You're listening to 2A Radio. As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
Hey guys, welcome back. Jim, we have about 2.5-3 minutes here in this final segment. Now, we've talked about guns. We've talked about different receivers and stocks. Talk to us a little bit about what maybe some of the better magazines out there are and maybe some of the better sighting systems that are appropriate for the AK fighting platform.
Okay, well, mags are fairly simple. Just about any of the metal Eastern European mags or Chinese mags will generally work well. I mean, I've bought like maybe 50 at a time and maybe found one or two that I, you know, couldn't use because they were dented or whatever. But the metal mags are built like trucks, and they just last forever. I've got some Chinese mags that are probably 30, 35 years old that still work just fine and look like they look awful, but they work quite well.
Nice.
The other alternative is the Circle 10 mags from Kevlar, the Bulgarian mags. Mm-hmm. They work really well in the AK. They're steel-reinforced polymer mags. They're a little lighter than the metal ones. They're also a little more expensive, but, you know, everything comes with a price, you know.
Sure.
Additionally, Tango Down, or U.S. Palm, also has a new polymer mag coming out that is for the AK that is just phenomenal. And they're a little bit cheaper than the Bulgarian Circle 10s. I don't believe they're quite ready yet, but they will be ready. They will be available sometime within the next week or so. They're just starting to hit the market now. And I've seen them at the SHOT Show, and they are. I've had a chance to torture test them, and believe me, when I torture test, they get torture tested hard. These are very nice mags.
So you said they were Tango Down or the other company again?
Tango Down is the manufacturer, but they're being sold under the name of U.S. Palm.
U.S. Palm, like P-A-L-M?
Yep.
Okay, good. All right. So how about a little bit about sights? We've got about a minute left.
Okay, iron sights. We like the XS Tritium sights. If you want to do something with night sights, they make a good replacement for the AK. We also do a modification on the AK rear sight because, as you know, it's a blade-type sight with a very small notch, and we have a pretty cool mod that we do on that everybody's really happy that makes it much faster and easier to pick up.
I've seen it. It's really cool.
Yeah, it does make a difference. And, you know, my eyes are kind of old. That's where we developed it from because I just needed to see the sights, and I couldn't anymore. And this mod really helps, particularly if, I mean, I can take my glasses off and run my gun and still be able to see my sights well enough. So I think it's worth it. On the electronic sighting thing, the aim points, any aim point works great on an AK. The EOTechs are a good scope, but you have to stay away from one particular brand if you're mounting it on an Ultimac. I can't remember the model number, but there's one EOTech that has the batteries in the bottom, And if you use that EOTech on an Ultimac rail, the heat can cause the batteries to cancel out. So if you prefer the EOTech red dot sighting system, make sure you get the model. It doesn't have the batteries on the bottom, and then you should be okay.
Great.
Otherwise, the aim point works just fine, and that's my personal choice of the aim point P1.
Jim Fuller, thanks very much. Jim Fuller of Rifle Dynamics. You can email jim@rifledynamics.com. Jim, thanks for calling in.
Bill, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for all your listeners. You guys do good stuff out there.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not-